In 2011, the San Francisco Symphony celebrates its 100th season. Since 1925, the orchestra has been making recordings. I'm Scott Fogelsong, a contributing writer and pre-concert lecturer here at the Symphony. For some years now, I've been exploring the Symphony's long and distinguished history and recorded sound, a vast treasure of music preserved in commercial recordings, in radio broadcasts, and from the Symphony's own archives. I invite you to join me in these podcasts as I share some of my favorite moments drawn from 85 years of great recordings by the musicians of the San Francisco Symphony. On this podcast, the Enrique Jordá era at the San Francisco Symphony from 1954 through 1963, a 9-year period during which the orchestra lost the discographic momentum it had acquired under Monteux. The choice of Jordá to succeed Monteux has always seemed puzzling, considering some of his competitors for the post, including Georg Scholte, Eric Leinsdorf, and William Steinberg. But Jordá was the popular favorite. He looked great on stage and had achieved very impressive results during the 2 years that the symphony held what were, for all practical intents and purposes, extended public auditions. So Jordá got the job and remained as the symphony's music director for 9 seasons. The symphony that Jordá inherited from Monteux was a lean, mean music machine. One hears occasional charges that it had grown slipshod during Monteux's last few seasons. But nothing of the sort shows up on this experimental stereo recording of a 1953 standard hour broadcast made by Ampex using magnetic tape. As Alfred Wallenstein conducts Beethoven's overture to the creatures of Prometheus, we hear a barely post-Monteux symphony in tip-top form. Jordá's San Francisco discography is minuscule compared to that of his predecessor, Pierre Monteux. He made only a handful of commercial recordings, and even though he conducted some standard hour broadcasts during the show's last season, no transcription discs of those broadcasts have come to light. Jordá recorded a grand total of 6 compositions with the symphony, 4 on RCA Victor and 2 on the CRI label. 3 of the RCA albums were works for piano and orchestra, with soloist Art Rubinstein, Gary Graffman, and Alexander Belovsky. It is said that the San Francisco Symphony deteriorated during the Jordá era. That may be so, but certainly there is nothing of the sort on display in this best-selling 1957 RCA Red Seal recording of Manuel de Falla's Nights in the Gardens of Spain, with Art Rubinstein as soloist. We'll be right back. Gary Graffman's iconic 1966 recording of the Prokofiev Third Piano Concerto with George Zell and the Cleveland Orchestra has remained steadily in print. But 9 years earlier, in 1957, Graffman made a charming recording of the work with Horda and the Symphony, originally released only in monophonic sound, but eventually brought out in stereo in the early 1960s. Here's the first movement leading up to the piano's entrance. The RCA album of the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto, with Alexander Berlovsky as soloist, is often cited as prime evidence of the symphony's decline under Horda's leadership. But it dates from 1958, just 1 year after the orchestra had played so luminously for Rubinstein. It is said that Horda's ineptness as an accompanist required excessive retakes, and that Berlovsky became too tired to play well. But Berlovsky was not a particularly immaculate pianist, nor was Horda a particularly inept accompanist. That said, the Berlovsky Rock II with Horda has the unenviable reputation of being the San Francisco Symphony's phonographic nadir. A digital remaster from the early 1990s reveals a much better performance than that reputation suggests. It's possible that it's less a performance than a patchwork of edits. Just as Berlovsky might have been struggling against exhaustion while the orchestra's frustration levels rose. But none of that is on display in this intricate ensemble passage in the third movement. Berlovsky plays with fire and accuracy. The orchestra is right there with him. And I've listened to this passage as carefully as I can, and I can't hear any edits. Horda and the Symphony recorded only one standard orchestral repertory item, Prokofiev's Classical Symphony. It was the B-side of the Graffman record of the Third Concerto. The last movement is marked molto vivace, or very lively. Horda takes a distinctly cautious tempo and seems to be aiming for a Dresden doll prettiness with a chamber music transparency of texture. It's a perfectly valid approach, although not one that most conductors are likely to take. Thank you. The 1958 Brailovsky recording was Horda's and the orchestra's last with RCA Red Seal. There would be one more RCA album in 1960 with Monteux as guest conductor. 35 years later, in 1995, Michael Tilson Thomas returned the orchestra to the label. The symphony was not to release a recording from a major studio until 1972. But the symphony made one more commercial album during Horda's tenure, on the specialty CRI label. It is to Horda's credit that he commissioned several works by leading Berio composers. During 1962, near the end of his tenure, he recorded a pair of new works by UC Berkeley professors Andrew Embry and Charles Cushing on CRI. Andrew Embry's Legend for Orchestra is written in the uncompromising atonal idiom characteristic of late 1950s academicism. As such, it is unlikely to appeal to average listeners. Horda's recording, however, offers the chance to hear some of the first chair soloists in the year immediately before Josef Krips's arrival and his subsequent transformation of the orchestra. Charles Cushing's Sirius is a lyrical and entertaining piece of music, written in a grandly romantic style that even evokes movie soundtracks here and there. Judging from the performance, Horda and the symphony really enjoyed playing it. In my opinion, this is the finest recording of Horda's tenure. Horda's directorship ended poorly. It was the general opinion amongst critics and listeners alike that the symphony had deteriorated, and many of the orchestra musicians were restive and dissatisfied. A stinging rebuke from Cleveland maestro George Zell was published in the San Francisco Examiner. But Hordaat faced the embarrassing circumstances of his departure with the grace of an aristocrat. We may never fully understand just what went so wrong during his 9 years at the helm of the symphony, but it was clear that a thorough rebuilding was needed. That rebuilding was handed over to the eminently capable Viennese maestro Josef Krips, who will be the subject of my next podcast.